The dangerous place where doctors and hedge funds intersect. From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is November 21st. It's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. We'll talk about the conflict of interest that's behind the biggest ever case of insider trading here in the U.S. We'll find out what early holiday gift Walmart is hoping for this year and find out why air travel is even less fun than usual right now. And finally, we'll indulge in the latest internet fad, Spot Mitt Romney.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
U.S. prosecutors have filed their biggest ever case of insider trading. Here's the allegation. SAC Capital Advisors, it's a hedge fund, got early warning about the failure of an Alzheimer's drug in clinical trials. That info let the fund sell its holdings in the companies behind the drug and reap $276 million. The inside information allegedly came from a doctor involved in the trial. Robert Prentice has written about this kind of thing. He's a professor of business law and business ethics at the McCombs School of Business at the University of Texas at Austin. Good to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you.
So the situation that is alleged to have happened here, how common do you think this kind of thing is?
It's hard to know for sure because all this happens behind closed doors, of course. But I think the best evidence is that insider trading has been increasing in recent years, in part because of the aggressiveness of hedge funds seeking out opportunities to engage in insider trading, and in part just because of, you know, how much money is at stake these days.
Doctors and other academics who are working on studies like this, I mean, we expect them to abide by some code of ethics, right? To be very upstanding. Why is that system breaking down?
Greed, I would guess. One of the biggest problems with insider trading recently has been the rise of these expert networks, where hedge funds that are looking for an edge hire expert networks to go find them experts. And in theory, there's nothing wrong with that. For example, there's a particular drug that's being tested by a particular company related to Alzheimer's. And the doctor knows the theory behind which the drug company is proceeding and believes, based on research that he or she has done independently, that this theory is not a good one and that the trial will end poorly. That would be perfectly legitimate use of a medical expert. The problem is when those experts give away material inside information that belongs to the companies that they work for, the companies they've been hired from.
If things, as you say, seem to be getting worse, what would you recommend to make them better?
Well, among other things, is the SEC continued to do what it has done. It has made insider trading a priority. It has sent billionaires to jail. And the fact that it is now using wiretapping and other really aggressive means, I think, could put the fear of God in some of these hedge fund managers.
Robert Prentice, professor of business law and business ethics. He's at the McCombs School of Business at the University of Texas at Austin. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Greece's major creditors, from European governments and from the International Monetary Fund, have failed to agree on the terms for Greece's next bailout. A meeting in Brussels broke down late last night after almost 12 hours of heated and ultimately fruitless debate. The BBC's Mark Lowen reports for us from Athens.
The European Union and the IMF want a long-term strategy to reduce Greece's debts to a more manageable level before they give the country more bailout funds. But they can't agree on how to do that and by when. Greece needs to reduce its debt to 120% of GDP from its current level of almost 180%. Virginie Maisonneuve is with the financial firm Schroders. She says the EU is pushing for a 2022 deadline, but the IMF wants it done by 2020.
By this delaying that deadline, you're giving a little bit of room for breathing for Greece, but we're adding 15 billion euros of additional debt needed in order to do this.
But Germany and others are not keen to accept a loss on Greek loans. The bailout is still unpopular in Northern Europe, and any decision seen to be giving Greece more money or more slack would go down badly with voters. In Athens, I'm the BBC's Mark Lowen for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Well, it is the day before Thanksgiving. Markets are closed tomorrow, but people aren't exactly rushing to get their trades in. It's been a pretty quiet morning, swinging back and forth. At the moment, markets are up. The Dow's up about 0.25%, sitting around 12,822. The NASDAQ and the S&P Let's just call them flat. Data-wise, today we got new claims for unemployment that fell last week by 41,000, though officials say it's still temporarily elevated by Superstorm Sandy. U.S. manufacturing in the first part of November is expanding at its fastest pace in 5 months. The survey by the firm Market shows a modest rebound from a slowdown this fall. And let's run through a little corporate news here. Yesterday's big morning news was HP, of course, claiming that accounting fraud by a company it acquired costed as much as $9 billion. Well, now the former CEO of that acquired company, called Autonomy, is firing back, saying HP's allegations are completely false. And just a short while ago, a judge ruled that United Airlines is not liable for security lapses at a main airport that allowed 9/11 hijackers onto one of the planes. World Trade Center landlord Larry Silverstein was suing for damages. And finally, here in the on-again, off-again saga of Hostess, we have brought you blow-by-blow over the past who knows how many days. This morning's news is off again. The company says talks with its bakers union have failed, and it is proceeding now to sell off the company's brands and assets. The corporate vultures are already circling, as our man on the Hostess beat for the last few days, Scott Tong, reports.
Even before private mediation talks came and failed yesterday, hungry investors anticipated Hostess going out of business after 82 years. Private equity firm Sun Capital is rumored to be interested in the whole company, which surprises many. Hostess is saddled with old trucks, high labor costs, and loads of debt. Aaron Lash is a packaged food analyst at Morningstar.
Hostess may be more attractive to strategic buyers that are just looking to buy the individual brand rather than acquiring the entire company.
Of course, the iconic brand is the one that starts with T, rhymes with Blinkies. Who knows how much it could fetch at bankruptcy auction, but despite all the healthy food talk, Lash sees the market value of empty calories.
There still is a place for less nutritious snacks and food items.
Hostess says the auction and full wind-down process could take a year. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Walmart is hoping the National Labor Relations Board will give it something to be thankful for this week. The company wants to stop hundreds of worker protests that are scheduled to take place this week on Black Friday. Walmart filed a complaint with the board to try to make that happen. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
Our Walmart is a group of employees who say they're fighting against unfair working conditions. They've been protesting for weeks. Actions like these are common first steps to unionizing, says Gary Chason. He's a professor of labor relations at Clark University.
This is what's often called a corporate campaign, an attempt to pressure an employer to stand back and be neutral during an organizing drive.
Chason says Walmart will fight any attempt to unionize. The retailer claims the planned Black Friday protests violate a law that limits picketing while workers are trying to organize. Our Walmart has gotten support from the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. Black Friday protests are an effective threat, says Ron Sieber, a professor of labor relations at Cornell.
And so here we have the biggest shopping day of the year, possibly. When could you have more of an impact in withholding your labor or in causing a demonstration of some kind than on that day?
The National Labor Relations Board told Marketplace it doesn't expect to make a decision before Thanksgiving Day. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
On this, the busiest travel day of the year, some flyers are no doubt finding air travel even less enjoyable than usual. Prices are rising, planes are packed. Just finding a flight in some markets can be tough. And it's not just around Thanksgiving. Cliff Winston is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and he's been looking into the dynamics that are driving the air travel crunch. Good to talk with you.
Good to be here.
So what's the industry been doing that you think is making air travel more difficult and maybe more expensive these days?
Well, first, I don't want to say the industry is going out of its way to make travel more difficult, but what they're doing is they're concentrating on the large airports and major routes, and they're cutting back service on the outlying routes and trying to maintain what we call high load factors, that is, having their planes filled with as many people as possible. They're reducing the number of flights, and they don't have to lower fares to fill up planes like they do when there's fare wars and they have extra seats. So they're actually able then to raise fares or at least keep them high.
Now, I remember from my days covering Northwest Airlines at the time in bankruptcy, and the big problem was overcapacity, too many planes flying around a bunch of empty seats. So you can't fault them for making money.
Absolutely not. They're behaving in a rational, profit-maximizing way. They've gotten a much better hand on their capacity. Mergers have certainly helped, and they're also more disciplined and not trying to buy every plane in sight. So they're doing all the right things, and obviously their shareholders should be happy that they're making money.
But of course, there are travelers who suffer for it. So what do you think needs to happen here?
Well, the natural solution is increased competition. People think the airline industry is deregulated, and that's true, but not completely, in that foreign airlines are not allowed to provide service on U.S. routes. So my sense is, if we're having a case where carriers are cutting back on service to certain areas, let's give a chance then for other airlines to serve them and open the market up and allow entry by foreign airlines. The combination of the additional competition and additional capacity would be beneficial to travelers.
Interesting stuff to think about. Cliff Winston is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Great to talk with you. Thanks.
Thanks.
A congressional advisory panel is recommending tighter screening of U.S. investments that are made by Chinese state-owned companies. The panel says those present unfair competition to American firms. But in the aviation sector, at least, taking a more protectionist stance toward China could lead to missed economic opportunities for U.S. companies. Here's Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz.
As editorial director of Aviation Consumer Magazine, Paul Bertarelli attends a lot of industry shows, and he's noticed something lately.
We're increasingly going to press conferences that are in Chinese.
Chinese companies are on a spending spree, snapping up U.S. aviation companies hit by the financial crisis, like the Minnesota-based Cirrus. China's largest state-owned aviation company, AVIC, acquired Cirrus and saved it from folding. AVIC did the same with a company in Alabama. Li Zoming is chairman of AVIC.
When we buy companies in the U.S. and invest there, we want to make our contributions to the recovery and development of the U.S. economy.
But even though AVIC kept these companies in the U.S. and restored jobs, Paul Bertarelli says, by and large, the aviation industry was suspicious of the deal. And it's the same the other way around. China's giving more scrutiny to American firms working in China's aerospace and telecom sectors. The growing distrust was evident in the recent presidential campaign, says Bill Bishop, an investor in startups in Beijing.
President Obama, in the final debate, referred to China as an adversary. So I think increasingly, you're going to see real pushback on areas that the U.S. considers to be sensitive or national security related.
AVIC has been accused of copying American stealth fighter technology to make China's first generation of stealth fighters. AVIC's Li Zoming denies this. But aviation expert Paul Bertarelli says it doesn't matter. Neither of the companies AVIC acquired in the U.S. could provide China with sensitive military technology.
There's no point in having this reaction and really being frightened of it. Capital is running around trying to find the best value.
And AVIC, with revenues of more than $25 billion, says for the time being, it's done investing in the U.S. Li Zoming says he'll take the company's money elsewhere. Reporting from Beijing, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
And now a couple quick lighter items as we head toward Thanksgiving holiday. If your family's like mine, people enjoy playing cards with each other, right, after the Thanksgiving meal. So here's one for you. As the Botox market among middle-aged women plateaus, evidently it's plateauing, one New York doctor is courting a new customer base. Dr. Jack Birdie is now marketing what he calls Pokertox for those serious players who desire the ultimate poker face. According to the Huffington Post, it'll keep you from raising your eyebrows when you get a good card, and it will literally give you a stiff upper lip when you're trying to bluff. And finally, 2 weeks after the election now, Mitt Romney may be fading from the headlines, but he's become kind of a hot internet meme, aided and abetted by Twitter and photo sharing services like Instagram, websites like BuzzFeed. Romney tracking, it seems to me, is definitely becoming a thing. Mitt Romney goes for a walk with a towel. Saw that the other day. Mitt Romney fills up his gas tank. Just yesterday, Mitt Romney goes to Disneyland. We've been reminded since November 6th that losing a presidential election is one of the most devastating things that a person can go through. But wasn't it John Lennon, I think, who said an internet hero is something to be? Something like that, anyway. Everybody have a good Thanksgiving. I'm going to have a few days off here, but my colleague Jeremy will take over for Thursday and Friday. Enjoy the podcast, and I'll talk to you again on Monday. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update, and this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.